What's up, everybody? It's Riley Blanton doing a quick introduction for this particular episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. I do the proper show intro in just a moment, but as I'm recording this intro, I just got off the Skype line with Brian Brushwood. Amazing interview. Had a blast doing it. We talk all about basically Star Wars history, how it influenced Brian's life, how what it was like going through the... And I think I got really a better picture of what it must be like growing up in the era of the dark times leading into the prequels. It's very fascinating and insightful stuff. So definitely, I'm super proud of this episode. It's awesome. But for the folks listening to the podcast version, as I have been doing for a bit recently, is I've been posting bonus content, and we did a bonus interview segment with Brian afterwards talking mostly non-Star Wars stuff. But I'm going to put that up on our super secret bonus page on StarWarsReport.com that you can get free access to by going to StarWarsReport.com/mailing list and getting that on up. So if you're hearing this podcast and it's during the weekend of May the 4th, I didn't realize that. During the weekend of May the 4th, I'll probably post the bonus content up what will probably be Saturday or Sunday. I don't want to wait too long, but I want to go ahead and get that up soon. But if you're hearing this and you're one of the early listeners downloading it on Thursday or Friday, sign up and do it anyway, because I'm often sending good stuff out. So StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. That was an awesome bonus segment. And I kind of wish in a way that I had the platform. We talk a lot about new media, and this by all means is not a new media show. So I don't really have the platform or place to do it. But for those of you who are interested, I think it'll be a really, really great listen. So again, StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. And without further ado, let's begin this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast, episode 87. I could do better by not muting my microphone. I'm your host for this particular evening. I'm so excited. I can barely communicate clearly, but for you guys who are new to the show, which we always do have some new folks coming in, I'm the founder of this here shenanigans, talking Star Wars at StarWarsReport.com and the Star Wars Report podcast. With me, as always, is my fellow co-conspirator, co-founder, co-host, co-awesome person, sister.
Co-everything.
Not a co-sister, my actual, indeed, real sister, Bethany Blanton.
Greetings, everyone. I am quite excited as well. Can't wait to get on this show. Glad to be back to the podcast, as I've been pretty busy
Welcome
with
back,
school.
Yeah. By the way, it's been a couple weeks.
Way too long.
We'll definitely touch on that maybe in the post-show. And also, as usual, our co-host, Mark Herleman.
I see the Bothan Matriarch is back. Oh, joy. It's going to be a great day. Hey, everybody. Always glad to be here.
Hey. And we are joined, I'm just going to jump straight into it, by a man who I followed a long time in the world of new media and podcasting, and I'm a huge fan of his work.
Stalker.
And he hates Star Wars Episode One. There he is. Brian Brushwood.
Oh, my God. I knew it. This was going to be an inquisition. Is it true, Brushwood, that you secretly want to stab George Lucas in the eyeball all the time?
you're like Patton Oswalt, who wants to go back to 1987 and kill George Lucas with a shovel. No, actually, I'm actually going to kind of stay clean from that for now. But I am curious, Brian. We're going to start, and I'm going to let the audience know, we're going to start in with the Star Wars questions, and then we're going to kind of go into a bonus interview afterwards. This is the first time we're doing this. I hope to do more of this in the future, and that bonus interview can be found as we continue the conversation in a little bit over at StarWarsReport.com/mailing list, and that's where you can get to our super secret, awesome VIP. Like, how many awesome words can I come up with? You guys should totally sign up.
But you should make it a VIB area, like only for very important Bothans. All you other Bothans, get out.
Well, our show slugline is actually "Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast," which now I guess I can't say that.
All right, look, my cousin's a Bothan, and we don't like it that you make light of that. His sacrifice should not go to be a mockery like that.
Well, I mean, Brian,
we should have made him a template before we sent him out on a live mission. That's the problem there. We realized this air later, got a Sparty cylinder, taking care of that problem. But we did lose about 150 real good Bothans that, man, I wish we could have brought those guys back.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, Brian, what was your introduction to that galaxy far, far away? I'm inquiring minds want to know.
Well, this is not, and this was something I think a lot about, the generational differences, because I'm way older than everyone thinks I am. I first saw, one of my very earliest memories ever was watching Empire Strikes Back at a drive-in movie theater with my parents. We had like a 1974 van that they pulled up. They backed it in. They opened up the back tailgates, laid out a blanket, and just had my mind explode. And I only have vague recollections of that. And I know but I definitely remember the day in 19. I know I watched it like on film when I got my tonsils out. Somebody had an actual projector, and we watched it on film. No, I'm thinking Hardware Wars is what I saw. But then, we did see it again on film projection at the local community center. I want to say like 1982, which was right around the time it came out on HBO. And I remember being sick one day and discovering purely by accident that the one day I decided to be sick was the day that HBO premiered Star Wars, and of course played it again and again and again all day. And then went and saw the re-release of Empire. And then from there on out, it was Jedi and everything else was amazing.
Holy cow. So how old were you when you first saw that, if you don't mind disclosing?
Oh, no. I was born in 75. So I assume I saw it in passing when I was like four, but didn't remember it. But my earliest memory of it, like I had to have seen it before I got my tonsils out, because I remember getting the joke of Hardware Wars. And of course, this is before the internet, or I don't even know if we had cable back in those days. So I must have seen it somewhere. But very vividly, I remember bits and pieces of The Empire Strikes Back. And I remember, you know, they re-released it back to movie theaters in 1982, I want to say, and was just like doubly blown away because, you know, I was so much smarter now. Now I got it. And, you know, from there, you know, just being blown away by Return of the Jedi and everything, it was awesome.
Well, so yeah, and this is certainly being very entrenched in the Star Wars community. When you hear these stories, it's often many times the same when people, that's the word like literally everyone uses, that it blew your mind, it blew you away. And I was wondering, do you remember how or why, what you think, what was that secret sauce that blew away so many young minds at the time?
Well, I mean, first of all, they were for me, and this is something I think we all think about a lot, but Star Wars was different than everything else out there. It was filthy. It was dirty. Like I watched, you know, you watch Star Trek and it's like, and now it's time for the battle, and now it's time to forget the battle and do space chess or whatever, and everything was clean. And we're starting to see that from a branding perspective start to change now, you know, with J.J. Abrams' reboot of Star Trek. You know, they're grittying up Star Trek, but there was nothing like the Star Wars universe. It was an entire universe made of filth and questions, and that was utterly engaging. Every single thing people talked about just made me want so bad to know more. You know, like you know, what's this crazy planet with two suns? Clone Wars, what was that? I just wanted to, you know, it's every single thing they said just gave me more of a desire to find out more of this world. And of course, they were stingy about what you could find out back in the day. I remember around that same time, second grade, 1982, I remember listening, scanning around on the radio and stumbling across the Star Wars radio drama on NPR at the time. And, you know, that blew me away as well, because like it was the same but different than the movie. There were more tidbits. And of course, you know, later I went and bought all of the radio dramas. And if you get the chance, man, the original Star Wars radio drama is just exceptional. Like the entire first episode, Star Wars as a movie starts off as with this giant epic space battle that came to define what the series meant to us. But instead, Star Wars the radio drama starts off extremely quietly with a dreaming farm boy listening to an Imperial recruitment tape. He's listening to, you know, come join the ranks of the proud. And you hear, you could hear the starry-eyed imaginings of him wondering, you know, what life could hold if he could only be a star pilot. I don't know. It's that entire time growing up, there was never, and I mean never, a time when I had enough Star Wars knowledge that I didn't want more answers to the more and more interesting questions that came along.
Well, and when you're talking about the ideas of the questions that it drew, I think that's one thing that made especially A New Hope so unique, was because you had this idea of a broad universe where you got the sense that there's a weighty history there. And I think there are certainly comparisons that are predecessors of it. George Lucas certainly didn't invent that. But when it comes to, if you go into Lord of the Rings, you have a sense of lore. And when you go into, well, to use a modern example, Game of Thrones, you have a sense of lore, of culture. And I think it was really the first time that you had a science fiction franchise that actually kind of has the tropes, the tapestry, if you will, of a grand history instead of something that's very, very straightforward.
It was the first, and here there's a lot of debates about, you know, is Star Wars science fiction? Because it's magic. Everything's magic. You got wizards who have powers that defy all physical logic. You have unexplained physics violating machines of all varieties. The setting doesn't even take place in the future. It takes place in a galaxy far, far away. You might as well say another dimension, or you might even say an alternate planet. Like, at that point, why aren't you on Middle Earth or whatever? But the stylistically, the fact that, you know, let's say for sake of discussion, let's call it science fiction, although I would deeply argue it's actually fantasy. But yeah, it's the first science fiction franchise that really respected these archetypes that we see in storytelling of all these other varieties. You have the old wise wizard. You have the young boy off the farm. And, you know, the fact that he was able to take something so familiar, because, you know, of course, the Star Wars is all based on the Hidden Fortress.
There were enough Kurosawa films, but yeah, the Hidden Fortress is certainly one of the main ones, especially A New Hope. That last act is very similar.
In many ways, think about this: in an age now where we celebrate and love mashup culture, Star Wars was the original mashup, and it was such a good mashup that it took us a decade to figure out what he had done. He had taken familiar archetypes and remapped them on a landscape that we'd never seen before, and it was utterly novel. You know, coupled with, of course, you know, it was just this sweet spot of this awesome magic trick that he pulled, on top of the fact that you had an extraordinary score from John Williams, that the visual effects were amazing. And if you listen to George Lucas, he says things like, and this is what was so visionary about him at the time, and I assume we'll talk about this later, weirdly, it was maybe what people didn't like about the prequels, but he says that and I'm going to misquote this because I'm a dumb, but basically in a documentary he said, the biggest mistake all of these science fiction directors make is they invest so much time and energy and effort into their models and their sets that they can't help but want to show them off. And they take too long and they let you see the cracks. What you need to do is have amazing models and blow them up instantly. Give them 3 seconds of screen time and that's it. And that was what Star Wars was. It was like nothing we'd ever seen before.
Yeah, I think that's what Lucas as a storyteller. I think that time in the 70s to 80s when you analyze Lucas's strengths and weaknesses. I'm someone who grew up and actually we had Justin on here 2 weeks ago, and that which was a fun and interesting interview, I will say. That being said, I first saw The Phantom Menace. That's first because I'm 21. I'm a kid at the time, and so the media blitz. I didn't even live in the United States at the time, and we came back in early spring '99, and Riley was 8 years old at the time. And so if you can't imagine, that was Star Wars. So it's kind of taken the process of actually being exposed to this franchise over time, where I've really kind of grown to love and appreciate what came before. And
well, so let me ask you then, because this is interesting. If you're 21, you're born, what, early 90s then?
Yeah,
like
91.
92?
Yes, 99,
91. Okay, 91. Okay, so this is going to be hard for you to understand because you never lived in this world. There was a time when you could unironically, not as a joke, turn to a friend and say, man, remember Star Wars? And they were like, yeah, man, that was pretty cool. As if it's just an artifact of a bygone era and that you would never see it again. I guess, you know, to take you through the experience, you know, I had all the toys, loved the stories intensely, experienced the radio drama, and I guess it was like 10 years later, I went to college in fall of 93, spring of 94. So it had been 10 years since Return of the Jedi, and the entire Star Wars franchise, there was nothing. There was nothing new in that world, certainly not, you know, in the in video format of any variety. You know, we would get excited about Laserdisc releases for increased quality or so on. And then, you know, there would be the latest THX mastered VHS tapes that were essentially the exact same thing. But we didn't care because it was like these were artifacts. They were our childhood and they were everything that mattered. But it was around this time when I went to college and when the black hole of Star Wars was at its highest was when I heard stories of, oh, did you hear about the new Star Wars books, the Timothy Zahn books? And I was like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me, right? And so and it was I was late to it. I waited until the whole trilogy came out. But around 96, 97, no, maybe 97, 98, I started diving in to the expanded universe. And this was what I had been craving for 15 years. Because remember, I talked about all the questions I had.
Sure.
And if you haven't read them, you know, I started with Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of Jabba's Palace, which were these collections of short stories of all those curious characters. You know, when you see the cantina, you see so many strange characters so quickly that you only get as far as asking, I wonder who that. And then you're on to another guy. Well, they go and they make up backstories for all these characters. And they were interesting backstories written by some of science fiction's greatest minds, you know. And Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire series is incredible. And if you haven't read the follow-up to it, the what do you call two books? Duopoly? No.
A duo. Yes.
Duology.
There you go. Biology? What?
Duology.
Duology. There you go. But the follow-up to Heir to the Empire, and I don't want to spoiler, but essentially he does a con movie. He does a con job where the Empire essentially tries to pull a con on the universe. Mm-hmm. At any rate, fell in love deeply with the Star Wars expanded universe. Read everything I could get my hands on for that. And this is around the time that rumors of the prequels start coming up. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, okay, at 21 now, Riley, I want you to imagine that you have spent more than half of your waking adult life wishing for more of something, right? And mm-hmm. and nibbling at the scraps on the side. And when the prequels were announced, I went to every re-release. I watched every single, online, you know, this is pre-YouTube. You would have to go to the Star Wars website and download these 320 by 240 low-res VGA featurettes on the making of. And, mm-hmm. and you know, just wanted so bad to see it, like this fulfillment of everything. And in fact, on the night of the release of The Phantom Menace, I waited in line with Ernie Cline, the guy who wrote the movie Fanboys. We stood in line together, for the 6 hours leading up to the movie. And, and that moment of being there for the beginning of it, it was truly magical. Ultimately, it was, to put it mildly, I was disappointed in the Phantom Menace.
See, I wasn't going to cover this territory, but now I, out of just simple pure curiosity, when was that moment where you realized this movie is not at all what I either expected nor wanted to see?
I didn't realize at the time because it's like you're there on opening night. It's like,
sure.
Son of a bitch, I waited 23 years for this moment. I'm going to, you know, soak it in and be blown away.
Is this
happening, you sort of discount everything. And when you don't like a thing, you're all like, you know what? Maybe that's just because I'm in a weird space right now. It's you're so into recording this moment of your life that you don't know. I knew for sure at the time that I was not getting lost in the movie, but I assumed that it was just because I wanted so bad for this to be good that I wasn't able to really give myself into it. And most of us, when the movie was over, you got to remember, there's not a single person who saw it opening night who invested less than 14 hours of their time to do so. I mean, it was a cultural event, right?
Yeah.
So no matter how the movie was, you high-fived each other because you were there for the event and you made it happen and you got the tickets and you got in and you had good seats and your popcorn didn't poison you. You were excited. And I remember there was a little message board where me and a few friends would post stuff. It was totally private. There's only like 12 of us, and I don't know that this has ever been on the record, but I'm going to go ahead and out Ernie. Oh, he had a phrase that stuck with me forever. He said, "Well, I'm just going to call it the Phantom Menace." I forgot what he said. The Phantom Menace was blank. He said it was brief islands of awesome surrounded by oceans of suck. And I was like, and that phrase has stuck with me. Like in that moment, I was like, oh, no, maybe. And he goes on to say, I'll watch it again tomorrow and blah, blah. And keep in mind, Ernie loves Star Wars as much as I do. Sure. I mean, and wants to be a filmmaker. He wrote the script for this thing. And so he's like, I'll watch it again before my final call. But that's where I'm at. And I really want to say I gave The Phantom Menace a fair shake, but I attempted 6 times afterwards to watch it again. Each time really hoping to be like, well, I'm not going to like this part of it, but I want to appreciate blah, blah, other things. And like, I believe fully half of them, I just ended up falling asleep before it ended. And I feel terrible about that. There's some 8-year-old version of Brian that's just looking at me, shaking his head, disappointed.
Well, Brian, let me ask you, I like Riley, I'm not that old. I'm 23. And so I didn't have that experience either. With this experience of approaching Star Wars, was there a part of you before you saw The Phantom Menace that was nervous, that was a little afraid that the Star Wars that was coming would not be the same as the Star Wars that was before?
No, not in the least. It never occurred to me. In fact, all indicators were that, like, everything you heard, like, you'd be like, and I ain't going to let no studio tell me what to do. I'm going to write it myself. Oh, George Lucas is going to write it himself. You know, and he's like, and I can do whatever I want because I've got a mandate. Yeah, you got a mandate. You can do no wrong. And I think that's part of what made it such a surprise. But even then, I was just like, I'll take that back. There was one thing that sort of gave me pause beforehand, made me just a little bit nervous. And one was, for a while, there was talk about Irvin Kershner directing. And of course, Irvin Kershner did the best of all of them, so, you know, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. But he was just like, sorry, bro, I'm too old. Which I believe is an exact quote. And then he high-fived him, then rode off on a Mountain Dew unicorn. The moment that kind of tweaked me was when Lucas sort of waved his hand and said, oh, Expanded Universe, those are just books. They don't count. This is the real thing.
Yeah.
And no!
That was deeply disappointing for me because on two levels. Number one, because I loved the books. And the books bent over backwards to fix continuity errors that you know, yeah. I'm not going to say lazy writing. I'll just say, you know, like, I get it. You're writing a space Western. You say something nutty like, you know, did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. Fine. But then, you know, then somebody writes half a book explaining how the Kessel Run involves this threading through a bunch of black holes where distance becomes time, and so it's easier to measure it that way. But then you just have a wave of your hand and be like, none of them count. I'm gonna make it up myself now. It's like, well, you sure did cash those checks. You sure you don't want to take what they have to say in consideration? So that was the only hint I had, but I think that's part of why I felt so kind of slapped with The Phantom Menace. And then hiding behind the excuse of like, well, it's for kids, as if it's for kids somehow means like, and we all know kids love bad pacing and overly complicated stories. If there's one thing kids love, it's stories about taxation on trade routes, you know? It's so it was very weird, you know. It's like, and I didn't want to be the I don't know how much of me got caught up in the hater craze, but I will say this. At this point I have watched the Red Letter Media review of The Phantom Menace many more times than I've seen the actual Phantom Menace.
Really?
And I just love it because you don't get that level of passion. And same thing with Patton Oswalt and you know, other people have put it into words so elegantly. Unless you love a thing very, very deeply, and I would say too much, at an unhealthy level. There's no way to feel betrayed by The Phantom Menace unless you felt like you had an unfair level of ownership of a thing that clearly you did not own.
Sure. Well, I mean, you talk about technically as Lucas, I mean, is the guy who invented Star Wars, so I could certainly understand coming at the expanded universe in a, well, it's my universe because I invented it. So sure, you can write your books, but that doesn't mean I have to follow. And I'll tell you what, Brian, having followed that, the Clone Wars is another example. Because, and see, I know you've heard things about the Clone Wars. I don't think you've seen any, have you? By any chance?
I've seen a couple of episodes, okay. But I hear universal praise. I hear that they and in my experience, and I hate to say this, and if you watch the Red Letter Media review, it's kind of suggested that people had so much respect for the franchise, so much respect for George Lucas's desire to make all the decisions themselves, that nobody called him on anything. Nobody said no. And great art is often made of compromise. And there was no need to be honest. The closest parallel, and I saw this firsthand, Phantom Menace to me was the Duke Nukem Forever of movies, because the reason Duke Nukem failed was because they had made so much money on the Duke Nukem franchise that they never had to compromise. They could do whatever they wanted. When they made a thing, they were like, no, we want to remake it. And so they got caught in this remake loop and got stuck. And whereas for the Phantom Menace, it was just decided, and then everyone did it, and nobody called anything. And I don't know any of this. I'm on the outside. I'm just an idiot.
I mean, I followed this extensively for years. That's what you're saying is true. Now, Brian, you and I have come to different conclusions about the film, not even in so much of the actual contents that there, because I think everything you've said so far is technically true about the film. But George Lucas, for instance, a good example was they were in pre-production for weeks before he had finally finished the final draft of the script. That's absolutely true. It was a matter of him getting down to a science exactly what he wanted. And I'm going to pause the recorder because Skype just dropped. And we're back. Okay. So what I was saying, Ryan, was basically a lot of these things are true about the film. I still to this day, and this is I think a conversation that I'm actually having way more fun having than I thought I would, is in terms of Lucas, the man who invented this universe and created A New Hope is still there as a storyteller. And I personally, especially considering I saw it first, found some very compelling portions. It's actually what you did, what Ernie Klein's quote, which I don't want to butcher because I don't have it written down, but the islands of awesome for me are very much there to this day. And I am personally very compelled by the idea of a tragedy of a man who could have made the right choices and didn't.
Well, and failed. Think about one of the trends we've seen in the last couple of years have been this succession of people who have wanted to fix and save the. I mean, we think about all the fan edits that try to fix the original movie, or even not Elijah Wood, but the other guy who looks exactly like him from that 70s show.
Yeah, Topher Grace.
Yes. Topher Grace cut his own edit that was shown exactly once and never again, would have never been shown were it not for the shining ray of hope in this whole story with Disney coming in and buying the franchise. I danced a jig. Like, I was somebody who was deeply skeptical of Disney taking over Pixar, and instead Pixar continues to make great work. I was deeply skeptical of Disney taking over Marvel, and then we got the freaking Avengers. And if there's one thing I loved as much as Iron Man was when I started, as much as Star Wars was when I started reading Iron Man when I was in eighth grade with chickenpox. And it's like Iron Man's always been my hero, and watching how they've handled it, how they've handled the Avengers, how they've handled this amazing quality of content. I am right now at my most optimistic for the future of Star Wars, for all the stories that await us, than since The Phantom Menace came out. Since that very night, I am now at the most excited I've ever been.
Fascinating. Wow. So and that Disney example, so where were you when you heard the news, not just physically, but also in terms of the way you were looking at Star Wars as a franchise?
It was,
lie to us all.
No, I'll walk you through it. the prequels themselves, all three of them, each one was a little less painful than the one before it for me.
Really? Okay, pause. That is something I did not know. So you do think that they progressively improved? Because I fully agree with you. But that you think they progressively improved?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the pacing was still all off. They were still giant vomited collages of CGI that you know, just blasted everything at once. But at least the second one had like some kind of gumshoe detective, you know, frog diner story in it. And then the third one at least had that epic battle on an exploding volcano planet that you know, visually they were a treat. Oh. But again, there was a sense that like, remember what I said at the beginning? What made me fall in love with Star Wars as a kid is that it was a universe made of questions and filth. And the three new movies were nothing but disappointing answers and clean green screens. It was in every way the opposite. Like for example, it's like, oh man, what were the Clone Wars? And you're like, oh, I guess they made a bunch of clones, and then they said fight each other.
Well, they skipped over it essentially.
That's what I wanted to ask you, Brian, because you're 4 years older than me. And one of the things when I watched the original trilogy was when Obi-Wan dropped that Clone Wars line. I was like, what is that? I always envisioned it as Jedi being cloned and them fighting their own clones and there being clones of everybody out there. I mean, what did you originally come up with in your mind when you heard the Clone Wars? I mean,
I didn't even think about it. But when I read the Expanded Universe books, and forgive me if I'm misremembering this, but I believe in the Expanded Universe books, they said it was a war over clones. Like somebody was cloning, and that was so horrific that we needed to outlaw it, which is why in this world of magic technology, Luke gets his arm cut off and they don't just clone him a new arm, because that would be cloning, which is bad and banned. So instead they give him a half robot arm instead. And all this stuff was beautiful and made sense. But the idea that instead, like, the aliens from Close Encounters of the Third Kind were secretly creating a bajillion-y clones, and then they don't bother to check anyone's identity when somebody walks up and says, I'm a Jedi, you're like, oh, you're a Jedi, these must be for you then. These what? These 10 billion clones we've been building for you. How did you not get the memo? It's like, I mean, let me flip this on its head. What new questions inspire? I mean, if I were to say, name some questions that inspired you during the original trilogy, I don't think any of us would have any trouble with all the questions we had. What new questions arose in any of the prequels as a whole, all three of them?
Well, how do these midichlorians tie into the nub that was already established?
I see. I'm just going to call that a misstep. He backed off the midichlorian. That's fine. Whatever. That was a missed shot. And he to his credit, he didn't pursue it any farther. But like, seriously, like from a story or characters, I mean, was there anything? And now here's the weird part: is I bet that in the minds of the people making it, they thought this was a sign that they had done things right. That now we've answered all the questions. The story is complete. And tragically, that's the last thing as viewers we wanted. We wanted to get it, and this is why I'm so excited about J.J. Abrams. If there's one thing Lost did extraordinarily well, Stephen King also does it very well in The Dark Tower, every time they give an answer, they open up two more interesting questions. And we didn't get that with the prequels. But again, none of that's – I'm nothing but focused on the positive future, the shining bright horizon that awaits us.
Yeah, yeah. And before we jump to Disney, because that's definitely something I want to cover, I think as someone who grew up watching – the first film I saw was Phantom Menace. I did it kind of a weird order, as many people in my generation did. It's Phantom Menace, then A New Hope, then Attack of the Clones, then Empire, then Jedi, then Revenge of the Sith. Yep. So mostly because of release orders and the way it was working out. And I'll tell you what, your point is absolutely correct about it, the prequels, by the nature of being a prequel, you so much know the direction where they're going is in that you can't really... They can't be there to ask questions.
Oh, no, but that's it. They could have. Imagine, let me sell you on my alternate history. This is the universe that I had imagined.
Like, this is the guy who did the YouTube video of what if the Phantom Menace
were
off.
Yes, canon.
Yes, exactly. This is the brushwood canon. This is a sideways universe. Imagine if the entire series had been, all the prequels had been a totally different set of characters with their own totally different narratives, their own totally different stories, And the entire show, much as I don't know if any of you guys have played BioShock Infinite, but they did such a great job. Ostensibly, the story of that game is get the girl, escape, shoot a lot of crap on the way. But they drop these teasing little hints of a bigger story that they leave to the audience to piece together. And now there's entire fan-run wikis. People write dissertations and theories. People talk for an hour straight about what they think things mean. We could have had that with the prequels. Imagine a story that takes place on some kind of techno-nano swamp island world with space hillbillies that are space racists. And have to, some guy has a coming of age, and in the background you hear about the bigger, wider elements of the universe, and amazingly, space racist turns good guy, blows up some other thing. There's all these amazing stories, and along the way, we could have heard the tales of the great Anakin Skywalker, maybe even met him for one tantalizing moment, or maybe followed somebody else's story. We could have had our own brand new set of questions that would so inspire us after watching the prequels that now all we want to do is go back and watch the original series and see if maybe there were buried answers somewhere in there. But we didn't do that.
And you actually kind of have my brain turning, Brian, because now I think to myself, because that's kind of what would create a story in an era that came before. But if it's not focusing on Obi-Wan or Anakin, then you still have preserved that that universe where you can still ask the questions. And that's something that Disney can do with spinoff films now. But I think we have an episode title too, Space Hillbillies.
Oh goodness.
So, but as far as Disney goes with that potential, now just by virtue of the timeline, now that they're moving beyond Return of the Jedi, how do you feel as an Expanded Universe fan? I don't know. Have you followed the Expanded Universe throughout the prequels and now the beyond Return of the Jedi?
You're not listening to him? Yes, he's a fan.
I will say this. I got so pouty over the prequels that I haven't read any of the Expanded Universe content, especially because it's not been clear to me. Like the moment Lucas says, them's just books, which I believe is also a direct quote before he drove off in his convertible.
They're just books.
He said, them's just books. So then when the books came out, I'm like, well, what's the point? If Lucas is saying these aren't canon anyway, why would I, It's like the only ones I've read since he said that was as many of the Timothy Zahn books as I could.
Yes.
Just because I thought he was a remarkable storyteller who really got the universe in an interesting way. He figured out how to, much as Lucas pulled the mashup trick of taking fantasy archetypes and putting it in a sci-fi setting, Zahn has gotten has pulled similar tricks, like for example with the Khan movie with the two books later, and most recently with Star Wars Scoundrels, which is essentially Ocean's 11, with Han and Lando.
Survivor's Quest and Outbound Flight were the ones you think.
There you go, Mark.
Have been Visions of the Past and Visions of the Future.
Well, and as far as Disney goes, moving forward with the franchise, the Expanded Universe, I'll tell you, through the Clone Wars series, George Lucas is the executive producer, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying a minute ago. He has those Islands of Awesome, of which I kind of just choose to ignore, as weird as that sounds, parts that, as I've grown older, realize these flaws in the films, and usually I prefer watching the original trilogy, but I enjoy watching the story of the prequels unfold, because I personally am invested in the character of Anakin Skywalker as a hero, because I saw him as one, especially in the Clone Wars more than the films. But moving forward with the way Disney's handling things, it's very well known, in fact, pretty much on the table, that Disney basically overwrites the Expanded Universe, which, by the way, I'm fine with because of the talent they have doing it. And you mentioned J.J. Abrams. I'm very anxious to hear your thoughts on the news, because we haven't actually really talked about that. You talked about where you were when you heard it, but what is your take, and kind of what does this mean now that Star Wars is back in the mainstream geek culture? Because we've been sitting here for several years as Star Wars podcasters, and we follow all the nitty-gritty, but you're kind of zoomed out and can kind of, I think, kind of represent a larger view.
It sort of changes things when your job, and keep in mind, like I'm a pundit to exactly eight people, it's like, but it's enough people between Frame Rate and the Weird Things podcast. And when we talk about on an NSFW, where it's like I'm dimly aware that I should have opinions on a lot of things. But the Disney news was one of those blessed moments where I didn't need to think or decide what I thought. It's like I felt it in my heart instantly. I was just like, oh my God. And that, like, the ramifications hit me instantly. The first ramification was it means we'll finally have the end of re-edits of prequels and of despecialized editions or whatever. Because the reason people invest so much time and effort in doing these things is because they have an unmet need with those pieces, and they want to make them right. There's never been a cultural phenomenon like this where so many people have wanted something to be artistically good that they've all dove in and tried to fix it on behalf of a multi-billion-dollar institution. And second of all, it means that we could also stop complaining about what we did or didn't like about the prequels or whatever. All that matters at the end of the day is new stories, and they're not going to try to wedge in. Okay, outside of the prequels itself, there have been an astonishing – it appears to me that for the last 15 years, the Star Wars franchise full-time job was to remind you that once upon a time there was a Star Wars franchise. The prequels, every movie is written – would virtually make no sense if you hadn't seen the original one, or at least the character motivations.
Sure.
And like everything is written in the prequels to remind you that these movies 20 years ago were really good. Star Wars Detours, I was actually okay with the idea of, and then I saw the clips, and they're still making cinnamon bun on the hair jokes. And it's like at least Clone Wars, the advancing areas were Star Wars The Old Republic, mm-hmm, and Knights of the Old Republic. And Knights of the Old Republic 2, BioWare did an exceptional job of telling stories at the level that we would expect from the expanded universe, and the Clone Wars. And these are areas that were largely kind of in the periphery, out of the watchful eye of Lucasfilm at the time.
Well, actually, that is the case with the exception of Clone Wars, of which George Lucas. And here's where I think, and I have no idea if what I say will have any weight to you, Brian, but I think George Lucas, came to a realization years after the prequels. Not that, you know, I think it's really hard to criticize your own work often, but I think he came to a point where there's such a vocal opposition, and there's also vocal proponents of it as well in the Star Wars community, but I think he came to that realization that when he did Clone Wars, he sat in a writer's meeting every single year and personally wrote the outlines to every single storyline. And then he had an episodic director, the showrunner Dave Filoni, and different writers like Paul Dini, who did writing for the Batman animated series back in the 90s. And he hired fantastic talent. And even then, there were some bombs, I will be honest, with Clone Wars. But there were far many more fantastic stories that came about. So I really –
there's a lesson – and keep in mind, there's a reason that Lucas is the $1 billion man. I mean, he did so many things right over his career in so many ways that matter and were so significant. But I would argue from an outsider view that he did his best work when he set himself up to have the most adversity. You know, his – the original, they went to Tunisia, and you see and they talk about this in the Red Letter Media review. You know, he during Star Wars, he was very punk rock. He's like, make it, show it for a half second, blow it up. You know, and then you see photos of him standing in the desert with sand blasting in his eyes, and then you contrast that with him sitting in a green screen extravaganza, just sort of waving his hands and leaning back. I would bet, and I don't know this at all, this is me making stuff up, but I would imagine being in the writer's room and sketching stuff out that maybe he got a little pushback, and probably out of adversity, superior art emerged. And that's good. And because now we're entering an age with this Disney era where there's going to be lots of adversity, a lot of heated arguments about what people can and can't do, and I think we're going to get better story as a result.
Yeah. I mean, there's a board that makes the decision now.
Yeah. One thing, though, that I would be very interested to see is 15 years from now, when all of us have seen all of these Disney movies that are going to come out, and things that are directed by J.J. Abrams, put together by, like Riley said, a board who will be making the decisions. how
but keep in mind, like, a board isn't always the best one, the both the way both the best creative decisions are made, but yes. You know, any place to intentionally create conflict to increase the quality of the art, I think, is good.
Exactly. But how will the movies, particularly the prequels, stand in the history of Star Wars films? Will this be a section of, oh, here is the Anakin Skywalker story? This is not meant to give
Can
us
Can I tell
questions.
You guys something? And this is going to, I'm going to say this, okay. And you're going to think I'm trying to be snarky or insulting. I'm genuinely not. I hope and believe that 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we regard the prequels exactly the way we regard the Star Wars Holiday Special, as a delightfully well-intentioned, though misguidedly executed, foray into what may or may not be parts of the Star Wars universe that you love.
Well, what's so funny about that is that is a Lucas creation, and it never gets the G-level treatment that everything else that George touches gets. When the Gendy series came out, they were all, oh, and George is a big fan of Samurai Jack, so we're going to do it in that style because George is all over this. But then all of a sudden, George has a whole other show called The Clone Wars. Wait, what? We have two now? Oh, wait, George is on this one, not that one. He was just blowing smoke. Uh-huh. You know, you'd mentioned about how you dropped out of the EU when Lucas made his statement about the books. And you know, I call myself the defender of the EU. I've watched many fans leave fandom for that same reason. My bread and butter is C-level, which is where all the books and comics work so hard to, you know how it is, before he made that statement. He's done things like that, and I mean, obviously, you were one of the groups that were like, okay, I'm done. I can't follow and pay money on something that doesn't quite count.
Yeah.
I went with the way of, I looked at it as, it's a history, and yeah, Lucas may be, you know, the best historian, but in my reality, he's just one of many, and he doesn't always get it right.
See, I think here's what broke me on the EU. Like, I can imagine a world where the EU breaks away from Lucas and say, hey man, we're not allowed to tell all our stories. Well, we're just going to go off and do it. I'm like, yeah, punk rock. Let me explore your fantasy world. But I couldn't continue to participate in a world where the guy who was still collecting the checks that I was writing him told me that these don't count. And we're like, hey bro, you know that this is all just nonsense that I'm paying someone else to write for you. Thank you for buying the book though. Like that was the part that really broke my heart. And I don't know. I say broke my heart. It's not like I, you know, was sobbing inside a cardboard box on the side of the road, but it was enough to keep me from buying them.
I talked to my dad about it. And I'm like, you know, for some of us EU fans, it really feels like, you know, you're a fan of all things Star Wars and George Lucas himself isn't. And you know, it's a lie.
That is
Yeah, exactly. You know where I'm coming from, and that's what I love about this.
I will say this. The main difference between the Holiday Special and the prequels is that there are millions of fans who are my age who are really invested in the story of the prequels, warts and all. And so I think there is going to be a living legacy, if not resurgence, of people who are currently kind of sad to see the Clone Wars go and to see LucasArts go and to kind of see Star Wars as we've known it for the past, 5-10 years come to a close. I'm one of those people who's optimistic about the future, but I think there's a chapter closing that's a shame, and I think that J.J. Abrams, I mean, the story treatments for Episode 7 are written by George Lucas. How much of that's going to survive the Disney thing, we don't know, but I have a feeling more of the George Lucas outline, not story or script, but more of that kind of general idea of direction is going
to survive.
Well, good,
because that's apparently what he was good at. Think about it. Like, when was Star Wars at its best? It's when George Lucas outsourced as much as possible. In Empire, Lawrence Kasdan wrote the story, mm-hmm. and Irvin Kershner did the direction. Lucas just, I'm sure, chimed in. Sure, he was a big kind of outline, waving his hands, saying over here kind of guy. But those other guys made the best story in the franchise. And here's the weird part. As much as I love Empire, I cannot wait to watch as Empire becomes my second favorite, third favorite, fifth favorite Star Wars movie. Like, that is the era that we're entering into right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the talent that's there that has the respect for the era of filmmaking that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg represent in the form of J.J. Abrams, in the form of Michael Arndt, who's writing the script, and in the form of, you know, Lawrence Kasdan, who's advising the script, you know, coming back. That's just, it's really encouraging stuff, and I try to remind myself of that when it's easy to get into the, why would Disney kill Clone Wars? Because, I mean, there's a large fan movement, especially of younger fans, who really miss those times, but I think it's better to stay optimistic. And I want to close the Star Wars conversation with this particular question. Movie Draft 2015. So basically, we're going to come to a time in 2015, and for our listeners who don't know, the brief summary is the Frame Rate and NSFW Show do an amazing auction off movies for a virtual currency.
It's fantasy football for movies.
Yeah,
and we the big event is the summer movie draft, and then we do a little, just because we can't wait a whole year to do it, we do a little miniature holiday movie draft as well.
I know, and I love it. So how do you think year 2015 is going to be about March, maybe April, and the NSFW show will be going live. How many Brian bucks would you give for Star Wars Episode 7? What do you think's the cultural and frankly box office return? How big is this going to be?
Here's the thing. It'll be up against the Avengers 2. So you tell me how much I should put in there.
Well, here's the better question.
I'm betting for stagger myself.
It will not be. They won't be anywhere near each other because they're both Disney at this point. So I think you
That's what I was about to say. Because if you want to pick a winner in that battle, the winner is Disney stockholders. That's who the winner is.
Yes.
This is true. Oh my goodness, Brian Brushwood,
somewhere,
man, that was
laughing.
that was incredible. I'll tell you what, we're going to bring the Star Wars discussion in this episode of the Star Wars Report to a close, but we're going to continue the conversation for a few more minutes since Brian has been so patient and awesome and kind of delve into the world of new media and podcasting outside of Star Wars. But Brian, for the podcast listeners, what is the best way to follow you and everything you do? Because I'm giving a mandate to every single...
Much like J.J. Abrams, I've decided my career has to be like a continuous mystery where you can always find out like, wait, he does that too? So at the base of the pyramid, if you don't know who I am and don't care, just do me a favor, watch a little show I do called Scam School. They're 5 to 10 minute bar tricks that you can use to impress your friends. You learn some magic. You learn to be the most interesting person in the room. If you're going to dive a little farther down the rabbit hole, on Mondays, I host a show called Frame Rate, where we talk about, among other things, Star Wars, whether it be on television, on movies, or on viral media like we have here. And, of course, the movie draft and stuff, that's Frame Rate at twit.tv/FR. And every Tuesday night is just the complete idiocy fest that is me and Justin Robert Young doing NSFW. And beyond that, I'll tell you, there's like 5 more programs that I participate in, but for that, you really got to dive into the BBpedia, which is a fan-run Wikipedia where everybody writes up articles on all the crazy horse crap that I'm up to. That's all at bbpedia.net, BBpedia.net.
There you go. And I'm also going to give a mandate out to the listeners to follow you at Schwood on Twitter, because that's a blast. I'll tell you what, Brian, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll continue the conversation on our super secret StarWarsReport.com/ mailing list, and that'll sign us off. So, Brian.
Yes, sir.
I have to...